From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on This Day in Maine, Tuesday, September 18th, 2018. And on this day, Democratic gubernatorial candidate Janet Mills unveils her economic plan and Maine schools' infrastructure needs and the choices they're making. That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by Norway Savings, supporting the colorful vision of Maine's business owners. Live your life in color. NorwaySavings.bank.
Democratic gubernatorial candidate Janet Mills today attempted to lay claim to a key issue in the four-way race, the economy. She presented a range of initiatives designed to encourage small business growth while addressing Maine's dearth of skilled workers and its aging labor pool. But as Steve Missler reports, Mills' plan is also fashioned to attack what her campaign believes is a weakness of her chief rival.
Mills unveiled her economic plan amid the din of milling machines and compressors at Kennebec Technologies in Augusta, a precision manufacturing company that does contract work for the Department of Defense. Her proposal includes overhauling and consolidating the state's sprawling and confusing economic development bureaucracy, providing no-interest loans to businesses that hire more employees, rural workplace grants that convert abandoned downtown buildings into shared workspaces for companies and workers looking for high-speed internet access, and tax incentives designed to repatriate Maine workers who have left the state, seeking better jobs and higher wages. Mills says the proposal targets the state's economic weaknesses, but the proposal also takes aim at what her campaign hopes is a key deficiency for her leading rival in the governor's race, Republican Sean Moody.
Why would we want to continue to do things the same way we've been and expect any new results? The answer is we should not.
During the Republican primary, Moody fashioned himself as the keeper of LePage's policy legacy. LePage, who is term limited and will leave office in January, has repeatedly championed a 5-point reduction in the unemployment rate over nearly 8 years. But the governor's critics note that Maine's post-recovery economy lags that of neighboring states in terms of medium wage and job growth. And last month, a report by the Maine Department of Labor painted a grim picture of the near future, nearly zero job growth over the next 8 years. Mills pounced on the report then, and again on Tuesday, as she portrayed Moody as the standard-bearer of LePage's economic policy and a status quo that could diminish the state's standing as a destination for young workers and new businesses.
Here's what they predicted. Virtually zero job growth in our state. We cannot stand for that. Complete economic stagnation, and that's after 8 years of an allegedly pro-business administration.
Moody's campaign wasted little time responding to Mills' plan. Brent Littlefield, a longtime political consultant to LePage who now works for Moody, said in a statement, quote, "Nothing Mills can put on paper can help her escape her record of job-killing taxes and red tape." Moody is leaning heavily on his business experience, as well as a compelling story about starting his chain of auto body repair shops from virtually nothing as a teenager. The Gorham native is also channeling LePage's 2010 campaign promise of reducing regulatory red tape, as he did during an interview with Maine Public Radio earlier this year, when he talked about what distinguished him from his GOP rivals.
You know, I've been on the receiving end of government for 40 years, so I think that's a big difference.
Moody has also touted that his 200 employees own about a third of his company through an employee stock ownership plan. Mills sought to seize that issue, too. Her plan would create low-interest financing through the state to help cut costs for companies like Moody's who want to convert to employee ownership.
This helps with bridge financing for the employees before they can get traditional financing.
Mills' plan may provide a sharp contrast to her Republican rival, but he isn't the only obstacle she faces in attempting to become the first woman elected governor of Maine. Independent candidates Terry Hayes and Alan Caron are also in the contest. And while available polls show that neither candidate has gained much traction so far, Mills will share a debate stage with them several times during the course of the campaign. And like Mills, both Caron and Hayes are outlining similar economic challenges facing the state. In a recent interview with Maine Public Radio, Hayes highlighted unfilled jobs as a primary concern for employers.
We need to attract people to fill those positions. We're going to be able to maintain and grow our economy. And I think the way to do that is to make Maine the best state in the country to work in.
Meanwhile, Karen, a Freeport resident and entrepreneur who holds a master's degree from the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard, has sharply criticized Democrats and Republicans for overpromising and underdelivering on economic policy. He told Maine Public Radio earlier this month that the state needs to overhaul its antiquated tax code and end the practice of giving tax breaks and state-backed loans to businesses that don't create jobs.
I want to give tax breaks to people who actually create jobs. Reward the people who are actually doing what you want. It's a radically simple idea, and we don't do enough of it.
In a statement, Karen described Mills' plan as decent, a far cry from the bold and transformative superlatives used by her campaign. And he said Republicans in the legislature would never fund Mills' initiatives. But Mills' plan also appears to serve another purpose, to convince voters that the current Maine economy isn't good enough and would remain so under Moody if he were to take its reins as governor. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
State regulators say the response by Maine's major electric utilities to last October's windstorm was reasonable. After investigating the utility's reaction to the storm, which left as many as 467,000 customers without power. Fred Bever has more.
Maine Public Utilities Commission Chairman Mark Vinoy says that given a weather forecast that underestimated the wallop Maine would take, Central Maine Power and Emera made the right moves, mostly.
When you have a bad forecast and you expected maybe 50,000 outages and you ended up with 400,000 outages, then you've got to adapt and respond. And the adaption and response, I think, was again reasonable.
The commission is calling for the utilities to report back on plans to address some weaknesses revealed by the storm. Those include the performance of so-called smart meters that failed during the storm, improving customer access to outage and restoration updates, and improving coordination with emergency management agencies to ensure that public health hazards are addressed as quickly as possible. CMP says it is already working on those issues. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
Maine school buildings are old. Many were built more than 50 years ago, and they need a lot of work. Asbestos and lead removal, new roofs, new windows, and new doors. But in the face of budget cuts following the Great Recession, many schools have struggled to keep up with those maintenance needs. And as Robbie Feinberg reports, that's forced some districts to make some tough choices.
There's a giant plastic tarp hanging below a hole in the ceiling inside the biology lab at Woodland Junior Senior High School. When it rains, water leaks through the roof shingles, accumulates in the tarp, and is funneled into one of the classroom sinks. You can see the water damage in the wood below.
Yeah, and the cabinets are basically, these are all, you can see it's all swelled up, and this is a very nice room, except this.
Facilities Director Craig Croman is basically a one-man repair crew at the school in Baileyville, Maine. Outside, near the back of the building, Croman scratches at a roughly dime-sized hole near a window and pokes his finger through. There's little insulation remaining inside.
What's that like in the winter, or even in the summer, this temperature?
I could tell you that if you put sodas against the exterior windows, it may not freeze, but it'll be nice and cold for the students. And we would love to get the new unit heaters with electric, everything electric, but it's a lot of money. And trying to get taxpayers to foot the bill for this whole thing is difficult.
Croman would know. He's one of the town councilors in Baileyville, which lies along the St. Croix River Reservoir on the Canadian border. It's home to the Woodland Pulp Paper Mill, which has provided jobs in the region for more than a century. But Superintendent Bill Braun says over the past few decades, as the paper industry went into decline, the district has had less money for maintenance.
You put teachers in the classroom, you pay off the contracts, you keep the building running, but you don't end up with the additional dollars to fix it. And the taxpayers' mill went down, money got short, and the first thing you cut is repairs.
Districts across Maine echo the same story. Deferred maintenance has piled up, leading to an estimated school capital funding gap in the state of nearly $1 billion.
I think it's rare that people are keeping up that well.
Scott Brown is the director of school facilities for the Maine Department of Education.
There are different areas of the state, I think, that are able to keep up a little better than other areas with the diversity in the state. in some of the rural areas have more challenges. I think there's a need there.
Maine's Department of Education provides some help to districts through a loan program called the School Revolving Renovation Fund. An analysis of applications from the latest round of funding in 2016 shows that some of Maine's schools didn't meet some fire and design codes or had problems like outdated fire systems and deficient roofs. Less than half of the applications receive state funding. And even those schools that do get assistance are facing other challenges.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Monday, September 17th, 2018. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team.
But he's yet to find contractors who are available to install them. And in the meantime, Wright worries about a decades-old heating system that could go at any time.
We might have no problem for the next 5 years, but we could come in someday next February and we could be shut down for a while until we, you know, have a temporary fix to get us through the winter season. So that's the dilemma that you have.
Richard McCarthy has seen the results of deferred maintenance firsthand. He's the assistant state fire marshal and leads the agency's inspection prevention division. Schools in Maine and most other states aren't required to be inspected regularly. And McCarthy says his office only looks at about 10 schools per year. Last year, he assessed the 8 schools in his home district of RSU 18 in Oakland as part of a district facility study. It found more than 100 fire code violations.
I told them, I said, a lot of this is deferred maintenance that's just not getting done. And it's not at the fault of the maintenance staff. They just don't have the money.
McCarthy says many of the violations were small, desks stored in corridors and coat hooks in hallways. But the district ultimately was required to raise about $400,000 as part of a local bond to take steps to fix the violations, including installing fire sprinklers in several schools. Mary Filardo, the executive director of the 21st Century Schools Fund, says fixing these long-lasting, persistent challenges is never easy for local districts, particularly rural ones. That's why her organization advocates for assistance from the federal government, too.
You look at the whole family's got to step in. It's gonna take a federal, state, local partnership to ensure any kind of equity in our school district.
Where are you headed, pal?
Back in Baileyville, things are beginning to look up at Woodland Junior Senior High School. After years of putting scarce resources towards repairs, Superintendent Bill Braun says the town recently approved a bond to start fixing the schools, including the leaky roof.
So what we've done is said, what's it going to take to keep this building operating another 20 years? How do we buy 20 years on a building that's already aging out? And basically that's what we're doing.
A lot of work still remains, including a mold problem in one classroom and a lack of fire sprinklers. But Braun says this school is the heart of this small rural community. And with more help, he hopes it can survive for the next generation of students. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Robbie Feinberg.
Tomorrow, we'll hear about a program created 2 decades ago to repair Maine schools and why it hasn't fully lived up to its original intent. Education reporting on Maine Public Radio is supported by a grant from the Nellie Mae Education Foundation. For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine, Tuesday, September 18th, 2018. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty.